will see a few familiar names on their ballot, including the late congressman's widow, Maya Rocky Moore Cummings. She's the former chair of the Maryland Democratic Party and heads a Washington policy consulting firm. Also running is Kwaisi Mfume, who represented the 7th District before Elijah Cummings. He stepped down to head the NAACP. For NPR News, I'm Emily Sullivan in Baltimore.
This is NPR.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 6:04. I'm Melissa Ingalls. The Wisconsin State Legislature's annual Black History Month resolution is again coming under a spotlight. As Sean Johnson reports, it remains unclear whether a white lawmaker will introduce his own competing resolution.
Representative Scott Allen, a Republican from Waukesha, circulated his resolution in December. It included the names of white people who had helped black slaves escape to Canada through the Underground Railroad. Milwaukee Democratic Representative David Crowley, who chairs the Legislative Black Caucus, says he believes Allen has good intentions. But he says what bothers black lawmakers is that it feels like Allen is trying to speak for them.
I've encouraged him to talk to every caucus member on his own to try to mend the issue that has happened in December. But I don't understand why this is happening, to be honest with you.
Allen did not respond to a request for comment. The debate last year received national attention after Republican lawmakers refused to pass a Black History Month resolution that honored Milwaukee native and former NFL star Colin Kaepernick. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Three more counties had wild deer test positive for chronic wasting disease during 2019 hunting seasons. DNR testing data show deer from Dunn, Sheboygan, and Marathon County had the fatal brain disease. Dave Clausen is a retired veterinarian and former Wisconsin Natural Resources Board member. He says Wisconsin hasn't been aggressive enough to impact CWD's spread through the state's herd.
The bottom line question is here, do we want to continue just with things as they are? Or do we want to try to change or alter the outcome somewhat?
Clausen says the state legislature should eliminate restrictions on hunting bucks, which are more likely to carry the disease, and expand hunting seasons to reduce deer density. Minnesota utility regulators have put Enbridge Energy's plan to replace its aging Line 3 crude oil pipeline back on track. They voted 3-1 to approve a court-ordered revised environmental review and reinstate two key approvals that the company needs to proceed with the disputed project. That clears the way for Enbridge to obtain two remaining major state and federal permits and some minor permits that it still needs. But environmental and tribal activists, who say the pipeline would aggravate climate change and threaten pristine water resources, vowed further court challenges to ensure that the project is never built. Line 3 runs from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. A lakeshore flood advisory is in effect until 6 tonight for Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha counties. Wind gusts of up to 35 miles per hour and waves of up to 9 feet are possible on Lake Michigan. Due to the high water levels, localized flooding of beaches and roads is possible near the lakeshore. The high waves may cause erosion along the lake as well. Last month, heavy winds and waves flooded much of the port of Milwaukee with up to 4 feet of water, causing millions of dollars in damage. You're listening to news from Wisconsin Public Radio. You can get more Wisconsin news anytime by going to our website. That's WPR.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, whose Sickle Cell Disease Advancing Cures program supports cutting-edge research to cure sickle cell disease. Learn more at ddcf.org.
You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and it's Oscars night Sunday. We're making room for a preview, your predictions, and we're getting a roadmap for the major Academy Award categories. Are you in an Oscar pool? Are you planning to watch the Oscars Sunday? Who are your picks for Best Picture, Actor, Actress, and Director? We're at 800-642-1234. Anna Thompson-Hodgick is a senior lecturer at UW-Whitewater, where she teaches courses on film. Anna, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Pete Schwabba is here as well. He's a director and comedian, and he hosts Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Pete, welcome to you as well.
Thank you, Kate. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with you, Pete. You called the World War I epic 1917 a masterpiece, and let's hear a moment from the trailer.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion.
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you fail, it will be a massacre.
What do you love about 1917, Pete?
I think I love, well, there's so much about it. And I think that quote that you pulled came from Twitter, and I'm not above using hyperbole on Twitter, but I do think it's a masterpiece. I think it's a very simple premise. They have to deliver a message, and they're doing it sort of in this dangerous atmosphere, obviously World War One, but it's well written. It's well acted. I love the single camera shot. Everybody likes to call attention to the fact that there were little cheats. Yes, there were, but to pull off what Mendes pulled off, it's just such a fascinating film on so many levels to me.
One reviewer called it a love letter to humanity. Is that overstatement at all there, or do you see that?
Yeah, I see that. I mean, there's all kinds of acts of humanity throughout the film, and you see the bond between these two soldiers and just their goal and what they're trying to do to save the lives of 1,600 people. And they do it with such humility, these two soldiers. Yeah, it's breathtaking. It's just a phenomenal film.
Anna, the subject of World War One in the trenches is often difficult to dramatize because the aspect of the war is so static. Does the script break through that?
Well, I think there's, you know, there's just so much action. The action just never lets up, hardly at all. And that's, I think, key to its appeal, along with, as Pete mentioned, kind of the technological achievement that Mendes accomplishes here with this film. And, you know, the film has been criticized by some just because the depth of the story isn't necessarily... it's there, but it's not in a sense that, you know, you have a kind of focus on just these two soldiers and their mission, really. And it's a mission driven film, essentially. And there's not a lot of room for
backstory
beyond that. But, you know, what Mendes accomplishes in terms of, you know, the utter devastation of war, dramatizing trench warfare in a way that we just haven't seen before. I think that there's a lot of value in that, and bringing to life a war that is quite distant in our cultural memory.
We're previewing the 92nd Academy Awards this hour with your questions, your thoughts along the way. And we have Pete Schwabe, host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. We have Anna Thompson-Hodgick, who teaches film at UW-Whitewater. You as well, will you watch the Oscars? Do you have a party or a tradition that goes along with the ceremony? Have you been to the Oscars? What was it like? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So Anna, let's just cut to the chase. Which movie would you select among the Best Picture nominees this year?
Well, I know what I would select, and then I know what film will win.
Oh, wow.
Well, but a 1917, there's no question that film will likely win. It's just in this really compressed award season, it just won the award at the BAFTAs over the weekend. I think it's a film of such technological achievement that there's pretty much no question that's the way that's going to go. My personal pick for Best Picture would be...
Wait, let me guess. Parasite.
Parasite. Yeah. And Parasite is such an interesting film. It's an interesting take on kind of the state of the world today. You have a real emphasis on sort of class warfare in this film, but it's from a global context, and it's just the look of the film, the story that is told in Parasite. It's quite. Quite relevant right now.
So, Pete, it takes place in South Korea, no English dialogue. How did this film cross over to, from the international category?
Well, I think what Anna said, there's a lot of relevance to that with the social impact. And I think it's kind of what we're seeing a little bit in our society, but I think it crossed over because it's really well directed. And it's just a fascinating story. I saw a parallel between this and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in the sense that there's this tension throughout the movie. And you keep waiting for something to happen. And finally, at the end, they both kind of have this violent ending that really blew me away. Both films I did not read a lot about before I went to see them. So they both sort of, I was just stunned when the film was over. I was like, what did I just see? The look of Parasite is phenomenal, too. I think great films just do cross over if they're well executed.
Yeah, Bong Joon-ho, the director, he described the film's pessimistic ending as a surefire kill, a downbeat doubling down. Pete, does that go over with the Academy when they are looking at this Best Picture category?
Yeah, I think it does. And what I thought was so great about Parasite, Kate, and I'll draw another parallel if I could to 1917. I read a lot of this similar criticism about 1917 and the character's backstory, as well as I didn't read about it in Parasite, but you sort of see that too. I think characters are defined by their actions. And that's what really hooked me with Parasite as well as 1917. I wanted to see what was going to happen next, not knowing much about. Obviously, in Parasite, you see this family is struggling and they're sort of just getting by, and you're fascinated by their every move. And that's what I thought was so great about it.
In 91 years of the Oscars, it is only the 12th non-English language film to be nominated for Best Picture. So that is remarkable, too.
Wow.
This would be pretty historic if it would win. Anna?
Right. Yeah. No, that I think most definitely. And what I think is going to happen is that it will win Best Foreign Film. And usually, you know, that's kind of the way, the Academy's way, right, of rewarding good filmmaking. But, you know, saving that top award, you know, for, you know, a veteran of Hollywood, Sam Mendes, a veteran of the Academy, Sam Mendes. So, again, that's... And you know, that's the other thing, too. So many times in most of these categories... It's, you know, not only is the Oscar awarded to, say, a good film, but also someone who's, you know, paid their dues, so to speak. And so I don't necessarily see the Academy taking that leap with Parasite for the top award, but it most definitely will win Best Foreign Film.
Wait a minute, wasn't it Quentin Tarantino's time? Isn't
yeah.
that what they said?
Yeah, right.
Come on, this is going to rock your boat, Anna.
I know. Yeah. No, I really, and I do love Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's a film that's, you know, a lot of fun, you know, kind of nostalgic for kind of Hollywood of yesteryear. But 1917, they're just, you know, just kind of has racked up all these awards this past season. So
it's an Oscar preview with two Wisconsin film critics. Pete Schwabe hosts Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Anna Thompson-Hodgick teaches film at UW-Whitewater. We're listening to Oscar-nominated music from Marriage Story, one of Netflix's big hits at the Academy Awards this year. Score was composed by Randy Newman, who also received a nod for Best Original Song with music from Toy Story 4. Join in 800-642-1234 with your picks. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network.
Checking the WPR weather forecast for the next few days. Partly to mostly cloudy in the south with highs in the 20s today. Sunny in the north with highs in the teens. For Wednesday, partly to mostly sunny skies and highs in the 20s. Thursday, partly sunny across the state, a chance of snow in the south, highs from the upper 20s to around 30. On Friday, mostly cloudy, with a few snow showers possible in the north, highs in the 20s. And a mix of sun and clouds on Saturday, some flurries in the south, highs in the 20s and 30s.
This afternoon on Central Time, the owner of Amazon was the victim of a hacking scheme using a common communication app. If it can happen to him, can it happen to you? Oh, yeah. Get the latest advice on phone safety. That's today on Central Time.
Support for WPR comes from 54,000 individuals and families in Wisconsin and beyond. Their investment in Wisconsin Public Radio enhances and extends the breadth and quality of programming available to everyone who listens. Thank you.
Support also comes from the J.F. Crow Institute with Darwin Days and a lecture on replicating viruses and adapting clones. February 12th at UW-Madison. More information is available at evolution.wisc.edu.
If you're just joining us, we're getting an Oscars preview here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So will it be Parasite or 1917? That's a big question floating out there in the Best Picture category at this year's Academy Awards on Sunday. We're listening to music from 1917. It was set in World War I, earned 10 Oscar nods this year. And the music's composer, Thomas Newman, has been previously nominated 14 times for Academy Awards, never taken home the iconic golden statue. So what trends have you seen in the Academy's nominations and its winners? Would you like to see changes in the Oscar award categories? Tell us your favorite Oscar film of all time, 800-642-1234. We have Anna Thompson-Hodgick, who teaches film at UW-Whitewater, and we have Pete Schwabe here, host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Let's take a call now. Cindy is with us from Appleton this morning. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. You know, I have not heard anything about Clint Eastwood's Richard's Jewel, which I saw and I thought was probably one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. And I think the guy that plays Richard Jewell is an outstanding actor, and he isn't getting any credit. I thought he did a great job, and he should get an Academy Award.
Yeah, Cindy, what did you like about the movie?
Well, it was based on a true story, so you got the history of what happened with that bombing, and, you know, of course, the fact that we have such a horrible injustice system in this country, you know, really reflects that. The poor man didn't even do it, and he was just ostracized for this, something he didn't even do.
So, Pete, this is the Richard Jewell movie. It's a Clint Eastwood movie about the guard from the Atlanta Olympics who was falsely accused of planting a bomb. What did you make of this movie?
You know, I did not see Richard Jewell, so I can't really comment. I have a tendency to – I live sort of in an area where there aren't a lot of independent movie theaters, so this is one that slipped by me this year. I did not see Richard Jewell.
Fair, fair. Anna, do you have any thoughts on that movie?
Well, I do think that, you know, one way, again, not every movie can be recognized, but, you know, the recognition of Kathy Bates. She is nominated for Best Supporting Actress for her role as Richard Jewell's mother. And I think that recognition is a way of the Academy at least recognizing the good acting that I think that went into this. And I can't speak to the lead actor not getting that nomination. But, you know, Clint Eastwood, of course, is someone, too, that has a long history with the Academy Awards, has been recognized, certainly, for his work in Million Dollar Baby. And you know, a lot of other actors have received nominations being in films that Clint Eastwood has directed. You know, again, that's, like, I think, a case, too, of, you know, that somebody, a director, at least, Clint Eastwood, has been, you know, lauded by the Academy, too.
So Pete, streaming services like Netflix or Amazon, they're continuing to become more and more active in the production of major films. What are you seeing there? Are they getting more traction?
I think absolutely. I mean, there are two Netflix films, I believe, this year that were nominated. And like I just mentioned, where I live, I rely very heavily on streaming to see my films because I don't have a ton of movie theater options where I live. So I look to them almost exclusively at times, and they've done some really amazing stuff. I mean, I would say they've arrived for sure.
Yeah, so The Irishman and Marriage Story, both, and Netflix earned 24 nominations this year, the company's most ever. Do you see any particular theme in what Netflix is putting out?
Not necessarily. I think quality is really their, you know, what they want to put out. And not only do we have Marriage Story and
The Irishman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also the kind of the heavy favorite for best documentary, American Factory, is on Netflix as well. And so this is a way for, you know, making this award-winning and Academy Award-nominated work accessible, right, to a much broader audience. As Pete mentioned, you know, for those of us that live in more remote rural areas, we can access this quality work during the awards season, which is, I think, really important.
Yeah, and, you know, nomination for convenience as well, regardless of where you live. I was starting and stopping Marriage Story last night as the kids were nesting beside me. I'm like, oh, we got to stop this. Let's go back to PBS.
Right. Exactly.
So, I mean, you can stop and start. You can watch on your own time where you don't have to carve out a full afternoon to go see, you know, something on the big screen. Pete, is that also an upper hand for these companies like Amazon and Netflix?
Yeah, I think it is. I think more people probably have seen the Netflix films just because of the easy accessibility. And like you said, that's kind of a blessing and a curse when you can stop and start it, because I did that with Marriage Story as well. I watched it like in three sittings. Now, you still see the film, but I like the experience when you go to a theater. But the great thing about Netflix is, from a studio aspect, they make these great narratives now.
Right.
They're also putting out documentaries. Like, they're kind of like this juggernaut of filmmaking. It's we haven't seen that before, really.
And, you know, as long as you don't need those sweeping landscapes that only the big screen would provide, or something fancy, right, 3D-ish, you know, the dialogue can win the day.
Right, right, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're talking Oscars this hour. Pete Schwabe here, Anna Thompson-Hodgick. Pete is host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Anna teaches film at UW-Whitewater. You can join in. What types of films do you like to see? Do you still make an effort to attend a showing at your local theater, or do you wait to stream movies on Netflix? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Anna, a decade ago, the Academy expanded the Best Picture category to allow more films to be recognized. 9 movies are nominated this year. In retrospect, was expanding the category a smart move?
You know, I think so. You know, you have just a wider array of movies that are recognized just with that. I mean, just a nomination can really raise the profile of a film. And this was done actually out of a need to recognize not only films that are critical darlings that come out every year, obviously, but it was also done to recognize films that did well at the box office, perhaps. And so this came out of in 2010 with the Batman film with Heath Ledger that played the Joker that year. That film did not, famously, not get nominated for Best Picture. And it really, the Academy Award ceremony had really suffered in the ratings because it was, you know, kept recognizing these films that were, again, critically acclaimed but just weren't as popular at the box office. And you, since that time, we have seen just, again, that wider genre recognition. We've seen a more international flavor to our Best Picture nominees as well, and I think it has been a really a good thing to recognize more films ultimately.
Yeah, Pete, what do you see out of the Academy's decision? Do you agree with expanding the Best Picture category?
You know, obviously the Super Bowl was on 2 days ago. It's very easy. There's a winner and a loser. With something as subjective as filmmaking, I think celebrate as many of them as you can. I could pick 5 of these films. I wouldn't be surprised if they won. I thought they were great. And I really don't care who wins. So I think opening it up, like Anna mentioned, is a great idea. It's a great idea for the movie business. It's a great idea for the Oscar broadcast, because I think it draws more people in. So I'm totally in favor of it. I do think it's interesting that I think they expanded it to 10. And they've never nominated 10. Like, I'm sitting there going, really? You couldn't find one more film to cap it off at an even 10? I find that strange. But.
Oh, they're keeping their options open. So, Pete, I want to pick your brain on Martin Scorsese, nominated for Best Director for The Irishman. He received attention last year after comparing superhero movies to theme parks and not real cinema. The box office hit Avengers Endgame landed a nomination for Best Visual Effects, but not other categories. Why do action films seem to struggle at the Oscars?
You know, I think it's, well, in large part due to the voters and the voting. But I agreed with Scorsese. They are like theme parks, but I also would not call them, I wouldn't say they're not cinema also. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. They are nominated from time to time for visual effects and that sort of thing. But frankly, the acting and this, you know, actors and directors are only as good as the material. And I'm saying this as a writer. I'm a little biased, but, you know, I'll give you an example. Laura Dern is in 2 films this year that were nominated. She's great in both of them because she's a great actor. In Little Women, she was very good. In Marriage Story, she was on another level. It's because of the role she was playing. It was just a different role with more for her to do. I think that's what these Best Picture nominees have that you don't see in the big Marvel comic movies. It's a lot of, you know, looking to the camera kind of jokes and funny moments. So I don't disagree with that. And I don't disagree with Scorsese necessarily. I would have liked to have seen Greta Gerwig nominated instead of Martin Scorsese for The Irishman this year, as much as I love Martin Scorsese.
Anna, what do you make of that? Are the Oscars finding the right films to be nominated when they have a category that includes, you know, can include up to 10 films?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think there have been some critics have noted that, you know, there is an inherent genre bias within the Oscars, you know, that dramas, for example, are just more likely to be nominated. Comedies, not so much. I mean, really, one of the only outright comedies to ever win Best Picture was Annie Hall in 1977. So, you know, it's been a while since just an outright drama has not won the Academy Award for Best Picture. So,
listening to one of this year's Oscar-nominated original songs, it's Love Me Again from Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic starring Taron Egerton. Our guides to the Oscar preview are Anna Thompson-Hodgick, teaching film at UW-Whitewater, Pete Schwabe, host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin, and you, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The Democratic presidential candidates still don't know who won the Iowa caucuses. Official results are delayed by what state party officials are calling technical problems and reporting inconsistencies. Problems with the new mobile app used to report results are among the issues. NPR's Juana Summers says as the candidates await the official results from Iowa, they're moving on to the next battleground state.
Some Democratic presidential candidates flew directly to New Hampshire from Iowa as they await the delayed results of the Iowa caucuses. Many of them arrived here in Manchester during the pre-dawn hours. Several dozen supporters of Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar held campaign signs and greeted her outside the airport. Technology problems and reporting inconsistencies kept Iowa Democratic Party officials from releasing results from Monday's caucuses. Klobuchar talked briefly about that.
We just had an excellent night tonight in Iowa. Of course, we don't know the results yet. Minor problem.
The Iowa Democratic Party says it expects to release the results of the caucuses sometime today. Juana Summers, NPR News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
President Trump delivers his State of the Union address tonight to a joint session of Congress. His speech comes on the eve of Senate votes on two articles of impeachment against the president. This is NPR News from Washington.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 6:31. I'm Melissa Ingalls. Wisconsin held its first Iowa satellite caucus at Marquette University last night, and Elizabeth Warren won by one vote. The event lasted under 30 minutes with only seven caucus-goers voting. During the first round, three people voted for Warren, two voted for Amy Klobuchar, two people voted for Bernie Sanders. Evan McCarthy was one of the three people who voted for Warren. He said the caucus in Milwaukee was nothing compared to an Iowa caucus, which could last for hours.
I wasn't expecting it to go that way. I was sort of expecting I'd be the only person, but I was pleased. I was also pleased to see people for Bernie, and I like Amy Klobuchar, too. I think that she would be a great VP pick for someone like Bernie or Elizabeth Warren.
The Iowa caucuses are seen as strong indicators for how a presidential candidate will do through the primary. It's Black History Month and the 100th anniversary of Negro League Baseball. The National Bobblehead Museum in Milwaukee is celebrating with a campaign to commemorate some of the league's most famous teams in bobblehead form. Megan Hart has details.
The museum launched a Kickstarter campaign Friday to fund the project. It reached its initial goal in less than a day. The museum's aim is to create bobbleheads representing at least 10 teams, including the Birmingham Black Barons and the Kansas City Monarchs. Phil Sklar is the museum's CEO. He says the bobbleheads will help educate people about the history of Negro League baseball, which has largely been forgotten.
Milwaukee had the Milwaukee Bears for a year, and the Negro Leagues are, you know, when you think of Chicago baseball, you think of the White Sox and Cubs. But not many people know about the Chicago American Giants, who are one of the prominent teams in the Negro Leagues.
Sets of the bobbleheads will eventually be on display at the National Bobblehead Museum and at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. Megan Hart, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Pro Football Hall of Fame defensive back Willie Wood has died. He was 83. Wood won 5 NFL championships with the Green Bay Packers under coach Vince Lombardi and made the first interception in Super Bowl history. He rose from undrafted rookie to play safety in 8 Pro Bowls. The Federal Communications Commission is giving tribes priority access to licenses that could help or establish or boost internet service in rural communities. Federally recognized tribes could start applying Monday. Wisconsin has 11 federally recognized tribes. Tribes had pushed to be the first in line for the licenses that were once reserved for educational institutions.
Support for WPR comes from All Energy Solar, full-service solar installers dedicated to making it easy and economical to achieve energy independence. Details on home and business solar options are at allenergysolar.com.
Wisconsin Public Radio covers the state. You can get the latest news from WPR delivered right to your email with WPR's news newsletters. Find out how to subscribe by going to WPR.org. You'll never miss a story with WPR's newsletter.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting an Oscars preview and listening to music from Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker by legendary film composer John Williams. Star Wars received 3 Oscar nominations this year for sound editing, visual effects, and original score. Who has A-list star power this year? What movie grabbed your attention in the lead-up to the Oscars? There were no women in the running for Best Director. Did you sense a void? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Pete Schwabba and Anna Thompson-Hodgick stay with us. Pete hosts Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Anna is a senior lecturer at UW-Whitewater teaching courses on film. So, Anna, the Oscar nominations have been criticized in past years for predominantly recognizing white people in Hollywood. We heard a speech this week from Joaquin Phoenix from The Joker, who felt very conflicted. So how does this year's nominee stack up?
Well, you know, this year is a kind of a tough year, honestly, for folks of color. And we only have one actor of color nominated for an acting role, and that is Cynthia Erivo for her role as Harriet Tubman in Harriet. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, that maybe Jennifer Lopez might get nominated for her performance in Hustlers, or Eddie Murphy. You know, he had quite a bit of a little comeback tour, you know, kind of prominently hosting Saturday Night Live in December, right before the Oscar nominations came out, for his performance in Dolomite Is My Name. Awkwafina, Asian American actress, she was also heavily touted to perhaps get a nomination for her work in The Farewell, and none of them, not these three at least, were nominated. And so that was, you know, that was discussed and talked and critiqued in kind of the pop culture news. And so, you know, again, it's just hard to know sort of kind of what some of the calculations were with Jennifer Lopez and her performance in Hustlers. There were some that say, well, she was just kind of playing a variation of herself, Jennifer Lopez. But there was, I think, quite a bit of nuance in that performance. There's also this notion, too, that you have to suffer for some reason, you know, in your art, and that the best performances are those that when kind of particularly women dress down or de-glamorize themselves, that that's going to lead more to a Best Actress nomination. Jennifer Lopez didn't do that in Hustlers. You know, she's kind of all in as kind of a sort of a glitzy and villainous character in a sense in that film, and so it just didn't translate for voters to a nomination for her in that role.
Well, let's pause for a moment here with Cynthia Erivo, who received a nomination in the Best Song category for Stand Up from Harriet.
Far across the river, can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer, gonna keep on keeping on, I can feel it in my bones.
Pete, what are your thoughts here on what we're not seeing and hearing out of the Academy?
Yeah, I would agree. I think, like I said before, I was really surprised Greta Gerwig was not nominated this year. I felt like I really like The Irishman. I love Martin Scorsese, but I kind of felt like I was watching a reenactment of a Martin Scorsese film. It was kind of strange. And I thought, and I saw Little Women, I'm like, wow, really? She didn't get nominated. So there are years where it's worse than others. Some years I'm like, wow, they're not even going to nominate women for best actress. You know, that'll be men too, but it is. And to Anna's point in a little bit, or to jump over, Netflix is doing a lot of stuff that I think that features more people of color in that. But I don't know. I can't get inside the head of these voters. So it's really tough for me to say why that doesn't happen. I wish it would, but unfortunately I'm not one of the voters. And the polls do close today, though, I should say. So maybe this program will influence some of the last minute voting.
Well, you saw Joker, Pete, and that yielded Joaquin Phoenix a Golden Globe and an Oscar nomination for Best Actor. Is he your pick for Best Actor in a leading role?
You know, he's kind of probably the odds-on favorite just because of the range of his character, and he was outstanding. Like, everybody talked about Heath Ledger's Joker years ago in The Dark Knight, and he was great. But talk about tension. In every scene in the Joker, I didn't know if he was going to flip out and kill somebody or if he was going to give someone a hug. I mean, he's a really phenomenal actor, so I would not be surprised if he won. I also thought Leo DiCaprio had some really amazing moments in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So I think it's a toss-up there, frankly. Mm.
Anna, who's your pick for Best Actor?
Joaquin Phoenix, most definitely. And, you know, there's so much that he does in that role that's, again, he's an example of a sort of suffering for the art. You know, he's incredibly thin in that role, lost a lot of weight. But, you know, just the things he does with his eyes in that role, you know, is, you know, incredible. You know, he's very, again, there's just a lot of nuance to that performance. I would say that perhaps a close second in my mind is Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory. Banderas has been on kind of a bit of a publicity blitz here in the last few weeks as well. And that film, Banderas has gotten quite a lot of kudos, from various critic circles, awards, and you know, his collaboration with his longtime sort of director friend Pedro Almodovar. That's also been kind of much lauded as well, and it's just kind of a comeback. The Academy loves a good comeback, you know, in terms of someone that's been around a long time. But I think Phoenix kind of has the lock on this category because of his, you know, again, the awards season, and you know, there's just it was such a demanding role, Joker, that particular role. So
we're discussing the 92nd Academy Awards this hour with our movie critics. We have Anna Thompson-Hodgick from UW-Whitewater, Pete Schwabe, host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Still time for your thoughts on the Oscars. Who would you like to see win an Oscar? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Anna, let's head over to the leading role, actress in a leading role. The Academy nominated Scarlett Johansson for a leading role for Marriage Story. And a 1-2 punch here, best actress in supporting role for Jojo Rabbit. Would she be your pick?
So not this year. I think she's also kind of canceling herself out a little bit in those two categories in some ways. But I do think, so I think Renee Zellweger and Judy, I think she's pretty much a lock. Again, you know, there are a lot of parallels here with Joaquin Phoenix's role in that sense that, again, the Academy really likes to reward, the actors that really push themselves, right? And it's not that Scarlett Johansson didn't push herself necessarily in a role like Marriage Story, but, you know, with Zellweger's performance as Judy Garland, you know, the irony, of course, is Judy Garland actually never won a competitive Oscar. And here you have Renee Zellweger playing her and in the waning years of her life. And it's just, you know, it's so tragic, but it's also just an incredible performance that Zellweger gives. Zellweger also just won the BAFTA this past weekend as well. And so
I think that's the British equivalent of the Oscars.
Right, for that role. And I think, again, that's a good indicator that it'll be Zellweger's night.
So, Pete, who's your pick for Best Actress? What do you got?
I tend to agree. I think Renee Zellweger is the odds-on favorite. And certainly, if you read a lot about this, it seems like that's where, like Anna said with Joker, you just have this feeling about certain categories in the winner. So I agree with that. I do think Scarlett Johansson, and I also agree with Anna that she, I think sometimes when people are nominated or are in two films, it's like, well, they've got enough recognition. Let's throw the award somewhere else, because she was outstanding in Marriage Story. And I like Saoirse Ronan too. She has a charisma about her that I thought in Little Women, I thought she sort of, she's surrounded by great actors, but I thought in some ways carried the film too.
Hmm. Anna, are the Oscars as important to Hollywood today as they were 10, 20, 50 years ago?
That's another good question. You know, I think they are in that they can really elevate a film or filmmaker that, you know, isn't already, you know, a veteran. We've seen that certainly with a movie like Parasite and the director of Parasite. At the same time, you know, the media environment is a lot more fragmented than it used to be, right? People can decide to tune in on Sunday night, or they can just, you know, watch whatever they want to watch on Netflix or Hulu or whatever else, right? And so I think, again, going back to an earlier point, you know, expanding the category, that was a decision really driven by the desire for ratings and not losing relevance. And so we saw this last year with Black Panther doing so well, right? Mm. And, you know, that was a film that obviously did really well at the box office that also received some measure of recognition. You know, it didn't win in the major, major categories, but it still, you know, elevated the ceremony in a sense, in that it got more viewers, right, because of more popular recognition.
Pete, what do you think? Is the Academy inclusive enough? Is it relevant today?
I think it is. I think it's interesting because I think the broadcast itself, like we talked about earlier, there's no host. So I can't tell sometimes, you know, I don't know if that was a ratings, if the host ever helped the ratings. I come from a comedy background. I was a stand-up for years. I loved watching certain hosts, and I think that did attract viewers. But I like the broadcast without a host. I like keeping the focus on the films as much as I enjoyed funny hosts. I like keeping the focus for the Oscars anyway on the film. So I do think it's important, and I think this just publicizes more the entire business of Hollywood, of which I'm a fan. So, I think.
We're listening to music from Joker. The film received 11 nominations for Oscars this year, including original music. Our critics are Pete Schwabe, host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin, Anna Thompson-Hodgick from UW-Whitewater, teaching film there. Will you watch the Oscars Sunday? Are you in an Oscars pool? What are your picks? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment for more Oscar Buzz here on the Ideas Network.
Here's the WPR weather forecast. Partly to mostly sunny in the south today with highs in the 20s. Sunny in the north with highs in the teens. Wednesday, partly to mostly sunny skies, highs in the 20s. On Thursday, partly sunny across the state with a chance of snow in the south, highs from the upper 20s to around 30. On Friday, mostly cloudy. The north might get a few snow showers and highs in the 20s. Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds, some flurries in the south, highs in the 20s and low 30s.
Coming up on the morning show, we get the latest on the results from last night's Iowa caucuses, and we'll find out what's next for the Democratic candidates. We'll also get the details on new federal restrictions for vaping after 7 on the Ideas Network.
A conflict with Iran.
We caught a total monster, and we took him out.
A new Mideast peace plan.
Today, Israel has taken a giant step toward peace.
A contentious impeachment trial.
They're impeaching me. You know why? Because they want to win an election.
President Trump will have a lot to cover when he addresses a joint session of Congress. I'm Audie Cornish. Join us for live special coverage of the 2020 State of the Union from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Madison, announcing a winter food event through February 28th, including birdseed, suet, and seed cylinders. WBUMadison.com. Discover a refuge in your own backyard. Support also comes from the Mead-Witter School of Music, presenting the new Hamel Music Center on the UW-Madison campus. Details on upcoming musical performances at the Hamel Music Center are at music.wisc.edu.
You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're previewing the 92nd Academy Awards, which are set for Sunday on ABC. This hour, we're incorporating Oscar-nominated music as we get a preview to the categories and films in the running for a Golden Statue. We're listening to one of the five nominees for Best Song called I'm Standing By You from the film Breakthrough. Let's take a listen to actress and singer Chrissy Metz. Are you a cinephile? Were there any films you were pleasantly surprised by last year? What would you like to see more of in Hollywood? We're at 800-642-1234. Pete Schwaba hosts Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin. Anna Thompson-Hodgick teaches film at UW-Whitewater, and they stay with us. Anna, the Joker composer Hilda Gunther-Dottir made history by becoming the first woman in 19 years to win Best Original Score at the Golden Globes and the first ever woman to win the award solo. What do you see here? Could this be a historic moment?
Right. She is the fifth woman overall to ever be nominated for Best Original Score and, again, being the sole composer on that score. And so she would make history on Sunday night if she wins that category. And so it's just really interesting that the music from Joker is such a haunting score and really matches up very well with the action in that film. And again, another example too of just kind of the broader internationalization or globalization of these awards. And so that's something to also kind of note and watch for Sunday night if she wins.
Pete, what are you watching for Sunday night in particular?
That's a great question, Kate. You kind of gave me a blank canvas there, and you still stumped me somehow. every year, best sound editing is my favorite. That's what I stay up for. Obviously, I'm joking. It's interesting what you were saying
about...
Well,
I didn't think you're joking. I mean, that we deal in sound. I was like, oh, yeah, I would totally stay up for that, Pete. That's like my total category.
I wish they had best catering. That's the one I'm waiting for, but I'm going to be waiting a while.
Craft services. Wins.
That's M&M serving. I love all these films, really, honestly. I thought it was such a great... You had period pieces. You had some great use of comedy, which I'm a fan of. So I'm really anxious to see who wins Best Picture, obviously. But you guys are talking about score, and... The score this year jumped out at me. You don't want to notice score too much because it can take you out of the film. It's like camera work, but it really did. There's so many films where it complemented the action. Like Anna said, certainly in Joker, 1917 had an amazing score. And I love the music in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So to me, this is probably the first year where almost every film I've seen, I really appreciated the score. I think that's really cool.
Well, Tom Hanks was nominated for his role as Fred Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Let's listen.
It's such a good feeling to know you're alive. It's such a happy feeling. You're growing inside. And when you wake up, ready to say...
Oh, I could just listen to that, Anna. Anna, what would be your pick for actor in a supporting role?
Well, that would be Brad Pitt, most definitely, for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And, you know, looking at that category, every other actor in that category has an Academy Award already, or two. And Brad Pitt there is the only one that does not have one. And, you know, he's another one of these veterans of the industry, and nominated before. But, you know, this is a role that, you know, was just kind of perfect, you know, for him. And so that's an easy pick for me in that category.
Did this category, Pete, fall together for you as well?
Yeah, it did. And I agree with Anna. I think Brad Pitt, it's kind of like we talked about earlier, his time, even though I think he's kind of overshadowed by Leo DiCaprio, because I thought he had more to do in his role. Brad Pitt's role is very understated in the film. He plays it as kind of this cool, silent hero. I really liked, as much as I was not a huge fan of The Irishman, I liked Joe Pesci. It was nice to see him in a role where he wasn't, you know, shouting and doing his Joe Pesci thing. He has played it very understated. So, but yeah, all of them are great. But I tend to agree with Anne. I think it'll be Brad Pitt.
All right. Well, we only have a few seconds here, Anna. You know, all the directors nominated this year are men, underscores past criticisms of the Academy. Should any female directors have been nominated?
Well, I definitely agree with Pete that Greta Gerwig was overlooked and should have been in that category. You know, Mariel Heller was another one for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, you know, that kind of got missed. Lulu Wang was another one for The Farewell. So there were opportunities there to get some women in the mix, and that's just unfortunate. But they went with veterans, kind of the veteran directors, it seems, this year, with the exception of Parasite.
Well, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it. Pete Schwabe, host of Director's Cut on PBS Wisconsin, Anna Thompson-Hodgick, senior lecturer at UW-Whitewater, who teaches courses on film. Math classes are often a major barrier to college graduation, with national data showing many students lack college-level skills when they arrive on campus. To improve student success and boost graduation rates, Rich Kramer reports Wisconsin is joining a growing number of states changing how math is taught.
It's the first day of spring semester on the UW-Milwaukee at Waukesha campus.
Just have to shut the door behind. I already took all my stuff downstairs.
Though Shubhangi Stalder has been teaching math for 27 years, she says she still gets jitters as she heads to class.
Yep, first day is always nerve-wracking for everyone, teacher and students.
Just before 1 p.m., around a dozen students file in and take their seats in the white brick classroom.
Hello, come on over. 098108?
Yes.
Yeah. So anywhere you see a yellow piece of paper, that's where you can sit.
Stalder's 2-in-1 math class is a new offering at the Waukesha campus and part of a growing national movement to reform how entry-level college math classes are taught. Traditionally, if a student scored poorly on college entrance exams, they were placed into a remedial class like beginning algebra. Remedial classes don't offer credits toward graduation, but students must pass them before taking a mandatory college-level math class. Stalder says stretching classes across two semesters means students are likely to forget what they learned.
So I was teaching college algebra, and I noticed how many, 50% of the students were not making it. Then even when you do complete innovative style of teaching, it still would not get the pass rate up beyond a certain amount, like 60% was the maximum.
But Stalder says when developmental and college-level courses are merged into one class, students don't forget, and they have a far better chance of passing both. Stephen Ercole is taking Stalder's math class while working full-time as a carpenter 40 minutes from campus. He says finding time to finish homework from a 6-credit math class will be tough, but he expects to pass.
The combined class helps, so it gives me less credits, but it knocks the majority of what I wanted to do for my degree. So I'm trying to go for the business, advertising, marketing kind of ordeal. And this gives me the biggest bang for my buck, essentially.
Alice Pulvermacher is a research project director for the University of Wisconsin System. For the last 3 years, she and dozens of faculty and staff around the state have been undertaking a series of reforms under the UW Math Initiative. Pulvermacher says initial data from campuses offering the 2-in-1 classes show promising results.
So when we look at the number of students that have passed those credit-bearing math courses, if they're in the prerequisite pathway, 34% of them pass from the initial number enrolling. 34% of those students pass compared to 82% in for students that enroll in a co-requisite.
Paul Vermacher says the initiative has also made it easier for math credits to transfer between UW campuses, and work is underway to better align courses with the state's technical colleges. UW-Milwaukee Assistant Professor of Mathematics Kevin McLeod says algebra classes have been the default for most college students, especially those who haven't declared majors. But he says not all students need algebra, so the campus and the math initiative are pushing to route more students through classes like statistics or quantitative reasoning.
They've been successful. Certainly the pass rates in those courses have been greater than the pass rates in our traditional algebra courses. And for students who do not need algebra for their majors, this is a very viable alternative.
Despite the improvement, McLeod says around 93% of students still gravitate toward college algebra, which means there is more work to be done. Now, in the math initiative's third year, UW campuses are working to expand these innovative classes while state universities court a wider variety of non-traditional students amid declines in enrollment. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.
Wisconsin Public Radio is my companion that is balanced, provides content and insights from a range of perspectives. We pay for other media, newspapers, television. There's no reason why we shouldn't invest in something that we get so much value from. I'm Terry from Madison, Wisconsin, and as a member of the 9XM Leadership Circle, I enjoy supporting this important cultural resource that benefits so many people throughout Wisconsin.
The Iowa Democratic Party says it will release